If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
I am the only person on planet Earth that has been to a Super Bowl with Bill Walsh, Al Davis, and Bill Belichick.
Michael Lombardi, thank you so much for joining me today.
I appreciate you having me. It's been a long time coming.
I know.
I could play Augusta before I could get on this show. It's harder.
God. Let's talk about you moving into college football. What's the difference between the two?
You know, the first day we were here, we took a picture when a player was signing his scholarship offer. We had no idea that we weren't allowed to be in the room because it would appear that we were enticing the kid to sign the deal.
Explain to me your vision for UNC football. Where do you guys stand in terms of money?
Well, we're very competitive. I mean, I think once Coach Belichick got there, they were determined to be competitive with the money.
Recently, people have asked you about Bill Belichick, and there's been these rumors about him leaving. Why would he leave? Are there any players that you would say are very misunderstood? Is this a position that you see yourself in for years to come? Or is this something that if Belichick moves, you guys are a team entity and you're going to go together?
Look, I love doing it. And I hope I can do it for as long as I can because I get a lot of pleasure out of it.
Today, I'm thrilled to welcome a true legend in the world of football, Michael Lombardi. With over 30 years of experience in NFL front offices, Michael has worked alongside some of the greatest minds in the game, including Bill Walsh and Bill Belichick. A three-time Super Bowl champion, Michael is widely respected for his expertise in leadership, team building, and football strategy. Now, Michael is taking on an exciting new challenge as the general manager of the UNC football program, where he's bringing his wealth of expertise and knowledge to the college game. We'll dive into how he's navigating this transition, his vision for UNC football, and the innovative ways he's addressing the rapidly changing landscape of college athletics, including NIL and player development. We'll also get his insights on the critical role of personality, preparation, and focus, because as Michael often says, success starts with the fundamentals. So sit back and get ready for an incredible conversation with one of football's sharpest minds, Michael Lombardi. Michael Lombardi, thank you so much for joining me today on Misunderstood. How are you?
I am great. Thank you. I appreciate you having me. It's been a long time coming.
I know. I'm so
I think I could play Augusta before I could get on this show. It's harder.
God. Well, I've wanted you on the show for a long time, but I wanted to make sure that it was the right time. Like I said to you, when I first wanted you on the show, I thought it was appropriate because everybody went into a tailspin over the Taylor and Travis thing. So I felt like it would be fun to have you on to give us the basics of just football and how it's played. So us women could pay attention in all our, you know, in all our Swifty gear, which now became the Kelce gear, right? But now it's translated that like all the kids games and things that people were doing are now all about football. So everyone knows how to play the game and watch the game. Now it's gotten a little complicated with this NIL stuff. And now you have this hot new job. And so I figured it's your time. I want to have you on.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah. I mean, I think what's happened is college football has decided to become a professional sport. And obviously because of the television revenue and the impact and the court case that the players deservingly won, because look, there was a time where at the University of Alabama, out-of-state tuition was probably very minimal. Now it's $65,000 to go to Alabama if you're out of state. And, you know, a lot of that is because people have seen Alabama on television playing football. Same thing here at North Carolina. If you're out of state and you try to get into the University of North Carolina, 2% of the people get in, no one else. And so unless you're an athlete, it's hard. And a lot of that is the appeal of the sports programs, whether it's football or basketball.
Right. Okay, so before we get into all the details of that, I actually want to find out a little bit about you. Like, tell me where you were born. What kind of family were you born into? Did you always want to be in, you know, in football?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, I was born in a family. I was born in a time where, you know, there wasn't a lot of football on television. But when it was, there was this guy on the sidelines in a camel jacket, and he had olive skin and a big nose, and I thought he should have been at all our family dinners on Sunday. And his name was Vince Lombardi, no relation. And I thought, I want to be just like him. And so I followed that path. I learned a lot about him from reading books, and I decided to go to college to really with the idea that I wanted to get into football. I wanted the world gets out of the way for people that know where they wanted to go. And when I was 12 or 13, I knew I wanted to get into this occupation, and then I had great motivation. And you know, we don't always have mentors that live next to us, but you know, I consider Bruce Springsteen one of my greatest mentors because his words and his music were so instrumental for me to cross Highway 9, to go chase my dream, to prove that some kid that grew up on a beach town, you know, with surfers and, you know, and on a little island where no one thought you could leave from, could actually go out and chase their dream, you know? And so when that screen door slams and Mary's dress sways, you got to go. And so I did.
Oh, I love that story. So what was your first job in football?
My first job was when I went to Hofstra University in Long Island, and I had this old electric typewriter that I would send letters to every single coach in the country, paid with stamps, you know, and all that. And I got two offers. I got a job at Illinois State, and I got a job at UNLV. And I picked the job at UNLV, University of Nevada, Las Vegas. And I went out there for no money. Basically, they gave me a dorm room, and they gave me a bunch of Burger King coupons to eat off of or go to the Holiday Inn buffet for $4. Yeah, and right. I just started working, you know, and I chased my dream. I think to me, when you want to do something, you know, it's really, it doesn't matter. And I always believe that you had to find something that you were passionate about. I grew up in this beach town, and I worked on my uncle's trash truck, and I knew I didn't want to do that. You know, right. I knew that wasn't fun. But when I was a bartender, I knew that was fun. And so I was going to do something that was fun that I didn't think was work. And I've never really, since then, I've never worked a day in my life.
Right. So you've had over 30 years of this really remarkable career. Can you tell us some of like your highlights, things that stand out to you as your proudest moments or things you really just, you know, are going to be forever in the front of your mind?
Well, I think, you know, look, anytime you know, I've been blessed to be around some incredible people. I wrote about it in my one book, Gridiron Genius. To work for Coach Walsh was probably one of the highlights of my life. You know, to be around someone who was one of the true pillars of this league, who invented an offense. And then, of course, to work with Coach Belichick and to work for Al Davis. I'm one of the only people on planet. I am the only person on planet Earth that has been to a Super Bowl with Bill Walsh, Al Davis, and Bill Belichick. So that's really, my career is about winning. It's about who who I've been able to learn the game of football from and hopefully make a contribution towards helping the team win. So that's what I'm most proud about. And, you know, what I'm also proud about is I've been able to keep my family together, and my two sons have actually wanted to get into this industry. One's the 49er quarterback coach, and the other one's the right here on North Carolina's coaching staff. So, you know, that gives me a great sense of pride too. But I think career-wise, being able to work with some of these incredibly talented people and learn from them was why I wrote Gridiron and why I'm so thankful.
Right. So as we all know, not every day is a great day. And there's a Navy SEAL term called easy day, where they talk about, you know, like the hardest day you've been through, but you're able to overcome the obstacles and learn from them. Is there something that stands out to you as something that was a really tough day or a tough time where things that you learned from it is what you carry with you now, and it's lessons that you learned throughout your career?
You know, Rachel, that's a great question. So I'm in the scouting profession, so I grade people for a living. And, you know, and that's what most people do. You meet somebody on the street or have a conversation, you're essentially grading their character. Do I want to continue talking to this person or not? And I think the only way you learn about people is through the mistakes you've made. And so I always say this, if you ever talk to a college scout, a scout, professional scout on football, baseball, doesn't matter, and they talk to you about all the players they found, they're a bad scout. Where if they talk to you about the players they screwed up on or they misevaluated, they're a really good scout, because life is about the lessons learned. And there's so many of them that I learned. There's so many days that you just sit there and shake your head and say, what happened? What did I do wrong? But if you're really good, you get back up the next morning and you say, that's not going to happen again. We're going to get better than that. We're going to prove ourselves. So all the disappointment, the heartache, losing a Super Bowl to Tampa Bay, you know, maybe not signing a free agent, getting ready to draft, you know, Warren Sapp when we couldn't draft him. All those things that go into your career, you know, that are disappointments, they're the greatest lessons learned. And so I wear them proudly.
I love that. I truly believe in like life being like a pendulum, that to the extent that you have failures or you feel pain is the same extent that you see success and feel joy. So I firmly believe in that. I love that you said that. All right. So let's talk about you moving into college football. Now you've been a GM in pro sports. What's the difference between the two?
Really just the NC2A understanding what the compliance is, what you can and can't do based on the rules. Now in the NFL, we have rules, right? So you know what you can and can't do in the NFL. And that's pretty clear. I mean, in the NFL, I could go have lunch with a player and buy him lunch and not get in trouble. And in the NC2A, I can't do that. Right. Or, you know, we could bring a player into our facility and feed him. And in the NC2A, we can't do that, you know, if it's not an official visit. So I think the hardest challenge is learning about the rules and what you can and can't do. You know, the first day we were here, you know, we took a picture when a player was signing his scholarship offer. And we had no idea that we weren't allowed to be in the room because it would appear that we were enticing the kid to sign the deal. So a little of those things that go that would just the common sense things that you would think would be no big deal end up being a big deal. So I have to spend a lot of time with our compliance people here at the University of North Carolina, who are wonderful, telling me about what I can and what I can't do.
So, all right. So from what I've heard, besides Bill Belichick, you are the man there. That is the biggest job you can get. Explain to me what your job is. What do you do all day?
Well, my job's no different than my job was in the National Football League. We have to build a scouting department here. Now it's a little bit different. We have a lot more names we're dealing with. You know, we're dealing with high school kids that would graduate in 2025, high school kids who graduate in 26, 27, 28. So there's a vast number of more. There's a huge volume of players. Where in the NFL, you don't really work on other draft classes. You work on one draft class at a time. Right. So you basically are working with, let's say, 350 names. And they're pretty easy to remember, and you know where they go to high school, you know who they date, you know what they like. You kind of learn those 350 people completely. This is 3,000 people because you're dealing with multiple. And so there's more volume here, and there's different avenues where players are coming from. And so it becomes a little bit a little bit overwhelming. It's a little bit like eating an elephant, you know, it's just one bite at a time. So what my day is, we built this, I have to build a scouting department to handle the volume of names so we can actually write reports.
Okay.
When you are ever giving money to people for whatever job they do, and especially in sports, you have to have a grading system. You have to have a way to evaluate the person. What are the strengths? What are the weaknesses? What are the problems? And once you can do that, then you can fairly equate dollar signs to that player. See, everybody talks about the NFL draft, and I'm sure anybody who's in your audience, they've heard the term, well, that guy's a first rounder. But everything in the draft is about money, right? It's all about money. And so you have to be able to say what the player can do to equate to the money. If I said to you, this player will be a starting player his first year in the NFL, that's probably a first round pick. If I say he's going to be a backup for 2 years, that's probably a sixth round pick. So everything is verbiage based on what the reports are. So I have to build a whole scouting department here at North Carolina where professional people are grading high school players, writing reports, and then also handle the cap and handle the money and the flow of how what we're doing with our locker room. And then there's the other areas that all pertain to admissions and all the things that go within to making a football team. So Coach Belichick can focus on the things he does really well, which is coach the team.
Right, right. Okay, so explain scouting for 1 second. How do you tell in kids that are high school years how they have the it factor? I mean, these are young kids, and I get right. There's, you know, so what are you looking for when you're scouting?
Well, I think a lot of it is like when you're looking for a date, right? Past performance predicts future achievement. You know, I mean, so what you try to do is see what they've done in high school. You know, were they the team captain of their high school team? You know, did they win a state championship? Did they make playoffs? What were the things that they accomplished in high school? The key to scouting is to learn more about the player before you get them than after you get them. Hmm. And so you have to constantly collect data. And you have to be like a judge in a courtroom. You can't begin with the end in mind.
Right.
So you have to be completely biased about the player. And you can't form an opinion until you have all the data there. And so you're just constantly trying to find out about the player. And you need indicators. You need something to tell you what this guy did. Now, not all of them are team captains. Not all of them won titles. But there's something in their personality that if you call people or you ask, you can find out a lot. So
that's what I was going to ask you, if it's skill and personality, because I would imagine now coming to a school like yours or a school like Ohio State, Penn State, where cameras are going to be in front of them and there's a lot of pressure, if they can completely fold or if they can deal with everything that's thrown at them. I mean, right, that's got to be part of it.
You know, you have to, the character is the hardest thing to evaluate because you don't really get to see. It's a little bit like, you know, you don't really see the true character of somebody until it's a stressful situation. Who has self-reliance? Who's able to be, you know, Brad Stevens, the head coach of the Boston, the general manager of the Boston Celtics said they won the Super Bowl. They won the NBA title because they had a lot of self-aware players. Right. So you need people that are self-aware, because what you want to be able to do is coach them. You don't want to, not them taking your coaching as criticism. That's sure. key. And yeah. so it's, a lot of it is, how were they raised? What was their family environment like? Right. You know, and one parent family, two parent, maybe they have no parent at all. So you're constantly trying to find out about, and you want to put them in situations where you say, okay, if this happened, what would you do? And you can't judge them, because here I am. I'm some white guy who grew up in a middle-class neighborhood in New Jersey trying to evaluate some kid, an African-American kid from the inner city. Right, we're two worlds apart, you know? So you've got to really understand the environment that they're in before you can judge them.
Do you get pushback, or do you try to stay away? I mean, I guess that's not stay away from kids with behavioral problems, but like, do you ever see someone with so much talent, but they haven't had the structure around them? And so you feel like you want to get in there almost as a mentor and be like, listen, let me show you how good you are. And if you can just focus, you'd be great. And something that comes to mind, and he wasn't a bad kid necessarily, but I had Ricky Williams on the show, and he kept talking about how people believed in how good he was. And he's like, I just didn't want to play. And everyone thought I was a drug dealer, whatever. And I just realized that I really prefer to be on a different level than what they perceived I should be doing and what happiness was. And I found that kind of profound.
Yeah, I think you can find that out. You know, the Navy spends almost $500 million to determine who can qualify for BUDS training. Okay. And typically one BUD class has about 175 cadets, let's call them, that are in that class. Mm-hmm. And when that class is over, there's probably 25 to 30 that make it. Now, they spend $500 million trying to figure out what's going on. But what they can't figure out, Rachel, is they can't figure out who can handle volume. They right. can't figure out who can do it every single day. And so for someone like Ricky, he may love the moment. He may love the celebration in the end zone. But what you have to find are the people that love the process, that are willing to do it day after day after day after day and do it the same way every single time. Mm. So that's part of scouting. And so really you take a portrait of the player's background. Has he done it? You know, it's rare to find someone who's, you know, I mean, there's a lot of kids that have great grades and are great football players. And there's some kids that have bad grades, but great football players. But right. is the reason they have bad grades because they don't work at it, they don't try, or they have a learning disability, or they have no home structure? Like, you just can't assume A plus B equals C. You've sure. got to really dig deeper into it before you clear it up.
Okay. Can you explain the money side of things now? Name, image, and likeness, NIL. Explain what that is and also what NIL Collective is.
Well, what NIL is simply this, that the schools are making a ton of money based on the players on the field, and they were not getting anything other than a scholarship.
Right.
So for the schools to use the player's name, image, and likeness, they should be rewarded. Now, some schools can not do that. They just won't be competitive. And so what they decided was that most of the schools had to raise funds from the outside, which is the collective, mm-hmm. so that they could get money to pay for this players that they have on their roster. We all know Ohio State paid upwards of $20 million for their team, which it allows them to win a national championship. So what it simply is the players deserve some form of revenue from these television rights, no different than the NFL players deserve it. Look, NFL salaries, when I started in the National Football League, you know, I think the whole budget for our 49er team in 1984 was $16 million. You know, I mean, there's players, you know, wide receivers make $16 million a year now. So, and why is that? Not because the owners are just trying to be more generous. No, because everybody's making way more money. And so this is why college is a professional sport. Right. And so they've kind of collectively bargained an agreement to where certain everybody's going to get $15 million of revenue from the TV deals for each university in the Group 4 area. So it kind of levels the playing field a little bit.
Did you know that over 70 million Americans suffer from chronic sleep problems? Sleep just isn't about rest. It's vital for hormone health, stress reduction, and overall well-being. I used to struggle so much with my sleep that I became addicted to sleeping pills. And then that only took care of the problem of falling asleep. Staying asleep was a whole nother problem. But then I discovered Dreamies. Dreamies is designed specifically for women, helping to support your body's natural rhythms through every hormonal shift. It's a powerful combination of melatonin, ashwagandha, and magnesium. It calms the mind, relaxes the body, and promotes deep, restorative sleep. Now I wake up feeling refreshed and balanced, and I no longer need those prescriptions. I fall asleep easily and without a worry. If you've been tossing and turning, it's time to let Dreamies transform your nights and your life. Prioritize your health with the power of sleep and take back your energy one night at a time. Dreamies, because every woman deserves deep, restful sleep.
So explain that to me. But if you have a collective that's making all this money, is there a cap on it? Like, how do you determine what if somebody has a huge pot to give somebody and then all the kids want to go to that school because they want all the money and therefore you have a great team and they win, right? I mean, how do you? Yeah.
Well, that they're trying to put some balance into it. But for the most part, I mean, look, what you're going to see now is you're going to see more of wealthy people involved with colleges because these NFL teams are so expensive. You know, I mean, Oregon's had Phil Knight for years. He's always been hugely involved with their program, which has been great for them. And other people donate too, but which, you know, it's not just all money that makes a great team. I mean, look at the Patriots. When we were there, we were winning Super Bowls. We were one of the lowest paying teams in the league. I mean, for the last 10 years before Belichick left in 2022 or 23, they were in the bottom 10 of all the money spent in the NFL. Right. Because it's more that you have to build a team. A team's a sense of belonging.
Sure.
And if you don't create that sense of belonging, if everything's dollars and cents, you'll never win.
Right. Can you explain the $20.5 million ruling? Like, what does that mean?
Well, I think, yeah, I'm not sure what that means. I know that $20.25 million, I mean, teams can raise more than $15 million, but I think where everybody's working off is a budget, because a lot of this money that you're getting from the donors has to come back every single year. It's okay. Hard to go to some schools don't have a huge alumni base to go back to their donors and say, hey, we need $5 million every single year.
Right. So I think I remember watching Moneyball. Is that what it's called? And of course, yeah. This is about football. I mean, it was about baseball. But is there some sense to that where, like, can money create or the lack of money, whatever, can you create a winning team? Mm-hmm. Using yeah. money.
It's what we call divergent thinking. You have to think that differently. You can't pay everybody.
Okay.
You know, everybody thinks creative thinking is what really matters. You know, divergent thinking is almost entrepreneurial. It's taking an existing idea and making it better. Sherlock Holmes was divergent in thought. He wasn't creative in thought. He saw things that other people didn't see. So when you get a situation like the collective where you have the 15 million, you can't pay everybody, so you have to work within systems to get things in place where, for example, you know, we know we have to develop young offensive linemen. We know we need to do that. So we may have to take 3 or 4 young offensive linemen, redshirt them, get them stronger, get them healthier, knowing that we can't replace them in 3 years.
Mm. Okay, so explain to me your vision then for UNC football. Where do you guys stand in terms of money and teams?
Well, we're very competitive. I mean, I think once Coach Belichick got there, they were determined to be competitive with the money. The school, okay. Our Chancellor Roberts has been very good. And this is North Carolina has an incredible alumni base. I mean, obviously people know of Michael Jordan and Julius Peppers and some of the great basketball players that have come through here. And this is truly, we had Roy Williams speak to the team this week, who's the former basketball coach here at UNC. And he talked about North Carolina being a family, and he's right. It's truly a great family. So we have all the resources here. Now we have to do things to make it work. It's just not, you know, there's nothing in life where you throw money at a problem that solves it. Throwing money at a problem never worked. I mean, just look at our government. Nobody throws money at problems more than our government does, and it doesn't solve it. Where you have to have thought behind what you're trying to do. And paying the most money doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have the best product.
Got it. Okay. Talk to me about, so part of the scouting is you're looking for kids in high school to come to your college. What about this transfer portal? What about people already in college going back and forth? Do you like the transfer portal? Is that a pain in the neck? And because it shows no loyalty, what are your thoughts?
Well, I don't mind it. I mean, look, it's a business, right? Once you get past the fact that, you know, it's not about getting a varsity letter. Once you get past that and you understand this is the business we've chosen, then you can accept the guys moving around and trying to do different things. Mm-hmm. I don't have a problem with it. I mean, to me, but the portal works both ways, right? I get to say goodbye to players and they get to say goodbye to me. I may get another player to come in. So, you know, I mean, it's the old Stephen Sills, love the one you're with, right? So we're going to do that. And you have to be able to make those decisions. Because, for example, if I lose a player, say I lose a player that's a good player, but I can replace him with a better player at cheaper money, I've made the team better.
Right. And how does it work? Are you guys in the incoming phone call business of people as well? Because now they see a team that you and Bill Belichick are creating and they want to be part of that?
Yeah, I think so. I think my phone rings quite a bit, you know, but again, you know, everything's about choices, right? You know, I say this all the time to people. Scouting is about elimination, not finding. Mm-hmm. The FBI doesn't look for serial killers in the phone book. They have a profile of what they're actually looking for. Well, we have a profile for what we're looking for at every single position. And so if you don't fit the profile, we're not going to talk to you. You may be a great player for another school, but that's meaningless for us. We want what belongs here, what fits for us.
Right. And I'm curious about what you see as a success story. Are you trying to cultivate these kids into pro players? And to you, is that a success story, or is your success story what goes on here at the college?
Well, that, you know, that's just one slice of the pie. I think the success story is ultimately winning, all of us working together to win, and individuals having their own success. I can't determine that. But one thing I do know is we'll get players ready. If they have professional aspirations, they'll be more ready to play professional football than any school in the country if they have the talent to go forward. You know, I mean, we are truly the 33rd team. We're going to teach them how to become a pro. You know, what's the difference between an amateur and a professional? Well, you know, amateurs look for results. Professionals look for processes. You know, amateurs do it sometime. Professionals do it all the time. And so that difference is really important. I spent a lot of time the last 5 years out of football writing The Daily Coach, which is a leadership a community that we started along with George Raveling, who's the former head coach at Iowa, Washington State, and USC. And he writes, we have a team of people. We write every morning. We have a leadership email that goes out. Right now, we're at 37,000 people that read it. But that's what we're trying to teach, is how to become a good leader, how to be a better person, because we know this. Very few get the chance to play professional football. And if you do, if you last 10 years, you've had one incredible career. But the most part, you last 3 or 4 years, you get the rest of your life.
Right.
You know, people think of athletes, you know, as if, the, you know, they, oh, this guy's made $10 million a year. Well, he may only make that for 4 years. Now, $40 million is a lot of money. But like, you know, he's not going to be able to be like Bruce Springsteen and go over to Europe and play in front of 100,000 people at 75 years old with the Rolling Stones. You know, this career doesn't last a lifetime.
Right. Okay, so now for the average civilian that doesn't really follow college football, where are you guys in the rankings? And what, now that we know you, we're going to be watching you guys, and what are we looking for? How are you changing the game for them this year? What players are we looking at? Like, what should we be looking at when we watch?
It all starts, you know, we have to get a quarterback that's ready to play. We've signed two of them. One's a freshman, one's a sophomore. So we got to get a quarterback that can come in. But what you're going to find from us is we don't have any answers. We have a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. And we're going to keep trying to answer those questions along this journey. We just started our off-season program yesterday. So we're going to get players in shape. We're going to get them in condition. We're going to make them lose weight. We're going to get them to get stronger, bigger, get their bodies framed up better, and put a lot of effort into what they do. And so, you know, for me, that's really important. And so success, again, we're professionals. We don't determine success by one thing. Success is determined by how well we handle the process. Because remember, you know, the guy that got me to do this job, who inspired me, and I never met him, Vince Lombardi, had a great saying. He said the greatest reward for doing is the opportunity to do more. Right. And we're going to keep doing more.
I love that. I've heard you talk a lot recently. People have asked you about Bill Belichick, and there's been these rumors about him leaving, and you keep saying, no, that's ridiculous. He's out scouting and he's happy. What's with the rumors? Why? I mean, I would assume you guys just got this really fun new job. Why would he leave?
Well, because people want clicks. I mean, and you know, the more you tell them no, the more they keep thinking you're lying to them.
Right.
You know, and so, and then they say, well, why doesn't he come out and say something? Why should he? Because you've raised the question. I mean, you know, to me, it's ridiculous. We're here to stay. This is what we want to do. This is what we want to, he came here. You know, Bill's a real smart guy. And if he thought there was an NFL job that he wanted to work in and be at, he would have just waited for it. I mean, he's Bill Belichick. He can call pretty much. I mean, he was having dinner with the president of Croatia. I mean, his Rolodex is fairly big. So he's won 6 Super Bowls. I mean, so if he thought there was, if he wanted to, he could have just waited. But I think the experience that he went through in the NFL proved to him that it's really important to have the right people and in the right situation for him to be the most effective coach. College football is more important than pro right now.
Right. It seems it. What can we expect from the year coming up? What are you most excited about? What should fans be looking at now that things are changing and people are really paying attention?
We're going to make North Carolina a national recruiting platform. I mean, look, Notre Dame's a national recruiting team. So is Michigan. So is North Carolina. We have one of the finest college institutions in the country academically. It's incredible. Mm-hmm. We should be able to walk in any home and say, hey, we are North Carolina. You know, the color blue, we've got Michael Jordan. We are We've got the great brand. We have a lot going for us. And our job is to sell that brand. Our job isn't to recruit that brand. Our job is to sell that brand. You know, and once you get here, you'll know why you came here. Because if you like hard work, if you want to win, if you want to be part of a team, if you want to be something bigger than yourself, you'll want to come here. So I think with us is about, you know, we're like the Navy SEALs. We're going to get better every single day. And that's what we're working on. And I don't know where it's going to lead us to, but I know if we do that, we're going to try it. We're going to get better every single day.
Yeah. Before I forget, I want to say you opened up by saying, you know, you believe that college football is basically pro football now. It's interesting to me, though, that college athletes can get paid so much money. And then someone like a Caitlin Clark, who's making seven figures, goes to the WNBA and then is making like less than $200,000. Does that bother you?
I think what you have to understand is, and I've learned this at a very early age and I'm old, is we're the entertainment business. You know, you started off talking about Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift. I mean, Taylor Swift is a billionaire, right? And she plays music. And so, but the reason she's a billionaire is because she sells out arenas. The reason the NFL makes more money than the NBA does and women's basketball is because the top 20 TV shows are all NFL games.
Right.
So as much as I love watching Caitlin Clark play, as the ratings go up and as the entertainment value increases for the women's basketball, which I'm going to go to the women's basketball game here Thursday night. I love watching women's hoop. So as more fans get passionate about that, then the money's going to start to roll in. But right now, this isn't a socialistic system. This is clearly about a capitalistic system. Money comes in. The TV networks are anxious to have the NFL. They want to have women's basketball, but the ratings don't support the numbers that they can pay out. So once they do, it'll be great. And I love the fact that she has been so dynamic for the WNBA. I love it. I love her personality. I love everything she does. I work for Al Davis, and he loved women's basketball. He loved it. He would watch them all the games. He loved Oklahoma, the great coaches that they've had in there in terms of watching how they did it and the demanding, whether it was Pat Summitt, whether it was any of them. I think it was really fun to watch. So it's all entertainment. You know, you know why people wonder why? No one thinks they can sing like Taylor Swift, so they don't really judge how much she makes. No one thinks they can write songs like Bob Dylan or Bruce Springsteen, so they don't, but everybody thinks they can play football.
Right. That's very true. I have a question for you about arenas and safety. 2025 has been off to a rough start, and a lot of things are happening in arenas, and there's a lot of talk on regular news, not necessarily like the ESPN stuff, but about the safety of arenas and fan zones. What are your, is that going to extend into college football? Has it already? Do you guys do major sweeps? Are you taking it more seriously?
Well, they have to. You know, when you have 55,000, I mean, this stadium behind me holds 55,000. You have that many people gathering in a very close environment. You got to make sure your player safety. I was at the Rose Bowl this year because my son's team was Oregon and they played out there. It's 100,000 people. The security was really good. A lot of yellow jackets. You felt a military presence there. And you say, why do we need this? Well, we need it because of the behavior of some of the people we saw in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. We need that. I mean, we have to show a strength to be able to deter people from harming our people. And I think, they'll continue. I mean, look, the New Orleans, that tremendous, the horrific events in New Orleans that caused the postponement of a day of that game down there. I mean, New Orleans Super Bowl will be a very, very tight Super Bowl with a high command center because that's what we need.
Right. Who are you watching these last couple weeks? Who was piquing your interest when you, I'm not talking about like high school people. I'm talking about when you were watching all of college football. Is there anyone that you were loving watching?
Well, I thought the Ohio State story was perfect. You know, there's something about when people put you and they bury you, there's something about rising from the dead, right? And I think Ryan Day has done that, right? He loses to Michigan. His team's kind of seems like it's in disarray with the fight on the field after the Michigan game. And yet, because of the new playoff system, he's one of the 12 teams that gets in. And frankly, they proved themselves. They got up off the mat. They got punched in the mouth and they came back and rallied. I think it's a great story. I think it's a great lesson for all of us that, you know, don't believe the hype, you know, don't believe all the stuff. And when you can get a team together and bond like that and work under the premise that we're not going to buy our press clippings, you know, it's a hard thing to do today. As kids read, they only want to listen to when it's good. But motivation always occurs when things are bad.
Right, right. What is your prediction coming from an expert in with winning teams for the Super Bowl this year?
You know, I think Philly's really good. I mean, they won that game in the snow. I think that, you know, Washington has been a great story, but I think Philly's a more talented team. And I think it's Buffalo's time. I think Buffalo beating Baltimore. I'm not sure Buffalo beat Baltimore. I think Baltimore beat themselves once again.
Okay.
But I think Buffalo with the great Josh Allen, I think that would be a wonderful Super Bowl, Buffalo, Philadelphia. And I think it might be Buffalo's time. I mean, look, they've got to do something now because they're in the great position. Now they got to beat Kansas City, a two-time Super Bowl winner. And it's hard to do. You know, when you play against teams that are resilient and have great resolve, they're hard to beat. You better bring it for 60 minutes.
Right, right. Are there any players that you would say are very misunderstood?
I think Randy Moss, and hopefully he's healthy. I think Randy Moss is probably one of the most misunderstood players I've been around because he was extremely smart. He understood what he was, what he did. He loved football. He got characterized as a malcontent. No, Randy Moss, you just couldn't bullshit him. Randy Moss was a straight shooter. If you were honest to Randy, Randy was going to respect you. And so I think he was probably at the top of my list to be. And I think Coach Belichick's misunderstood because people just see him at a press conference and they don't realize, you know, that he's got a job bigger than making the press happy. And so I think that's ultimately where you get into those, you know, players are misunderstood, coaches are, but you see a different side of them. I think Randy was one of those players that you saw a completely different side. And there's some that go the other way too, that the media loves that are not really what the media thinks they are.
Right. You have done so much with your career. You're starting this new path. What do you see, you know, as something on your bucket list going forward that you really hope to do?
I hope to write another book because I do love writing. You know, I love to write. And I'm going to write about this experience here because I think it's something that from the inside, I could tell a good story to people when it's the right time. And being around the greatest coach of all time to tell that story again. And I think to me, my story is about really, you know, having a second career, because when I left the NFL in 2007, after the Super Bowl in 17, I didn't know what was going to happen to me. But, you know, I found that I could have a second career and I've enjoyed it. And I think to me, it goes back to Douglas MacArthur. He has this thing called the creative youth, which he stole from actually a drugstore owner down in Birmingham. And he read it to the West Point cadets when he was leaving. But, you know, he talks about youth being a state of mind, that you don't grow old by years. You grow old by giving up on your ideas, by giving up on the things that are important in your life. When you lose your curiosity, when you lose your luster for living, you fade away. And I didn't want to do that.
Right. Amazing. Is this a position that you see yourself in for years to come? Or is this something that if Belichick moves, you guys are a team entity and you're going to go together?
Look, I love doing it, and I hope I can do it forever, as long as I can, because I get a lot of pleasure out of it. You know, I think I'm more ready to do it. I mean, look, you know, everybody, we all have ambition when we're young, but let's be honest, we're not very good when we're young. But when we're older, we have more experience. And in these jobs, experience matters. I think I'm probably right now at my age, I'm probably more ready to do this job than I ever have.
That's amazing. I'm so glad to hear it. All right. Well, we are going to be watching. I'm very excited for you. It's been an honor getting to know you. I'm going to be rooting for you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, Rachel. I really appreciate it. Yeah. Thank you.
Of course.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.